Case number 19-7034, Mary Irwin Simpson and Kevin Simpson, appellants, versus Erijah Burkhart and Erijah X. Burkhart. Ms. Jury for the appellants, Ms. Robertson for the appellees.
Good morning, counsel. Ms. Jury, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Amanda Duray, and I represent the appellants Mary Irwin Simpson and Kevin Simpson in this appeal against AirAsia Burkhart. Ms. Simpson was traveling on an international AirAsia Burkhart flight in May of 2016 from Malaysia to Cambodia when a flight attendant spilled hot water on her. The pain from the burns was so intense that she fainted in the bathroom. AirAsia flight attendants then continuously dropped her as they attempted to move her around the aircraft. She spent 10 days in a Cambodian hospital and later sought treatment in the United States, her principal and permanent place of residence, after being forced to cancel the remainder of her trip. AirAsia Burkhart is an air carrier based out of Malaysia. AirAsia X Burkhart is an affiliate of AirAsia, who is also based out of Malaysia, but who is domestically incorporated in the United States in Hawaii. They do share the same booking website, and they operate connecting flights from the United States to Southeast Asia. Now, the appeal today is concerned with the Montreal Convention, which is a self-executing air carriage treaty that exclusively governs Ms. Simpson's rights against AirAsia because her injuries occurred on board an aircraft during international carriage. It creates a private right of action in United States courts and the exclusive cause of action in this case. Article 33 of the Montreal Convention is where we're looking at today, and that is concerned with...
Could I ask you... I know that you have your subject matter jurisdiction issue too, but there's also a personal jurisdiction issue in the case. And would you mind focusing on the personal jurisdiction question at the outset and just explaining how it is under the Daimler test, which now governs the maintenance of a website, would be enough to give rise to personal jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. And I do actually want to spend a bit of time on this issue because I know that this issue must be reached even if the court accepts the appellant's interpretation of Article 33, Section 2. So forgive me if it's slightly long-winded until I get to my point, but I do want to address your question. The United States was an influential drafter of the Montreal Convention, so it's easy to see how personal jurisdictional ideas are already baked into Article 33. So the first two bases in Article 33, Section 1 are where an action can be brought are the domicile of the carrier and the principal place of business of the carrier, which for AirAsia Burkhart are both Malaysia, and these echo general all-purpose jurisdiction. The other two jurisdictional locations are the place where the carrier has a place of business where the contract of air carriage was made and the court at the place of destination. And those kind of call specific jurisdiction into mind because they arise out of or are related to the defendant's case-specific contacts with the forum. Now, Article 33, Section 2 exists with regard to personal jurisdiction. There's two ways to see it. And one of the ways is through this element of consent within the Montreal Convention, because Article 33, Section 2 sweeps quite broadly. And it is invoked when a carrier does business in the passenger's domicile, either directly or indirectly. And when an air carrier undertakes international carriage of persons, baggage, or cargo in a signatory state party to the Montreal Convention, it consents to the Montreal Convention as controlling law for the accidents that occur during these international flights. So for example, the Montreal Convention requires state parties to have their carriers maintain liability insurance for accidents arising out of the convention. So Article 33,
Ms. Duray,
Section 2.
Are you making a consent-based personal jurisdiction argument? Because I understood on the record in this case that the personal jurisdiction argument was based on contacts.
I am making a consent argument, and I'm also making an argument through the lens of general jurisdiction. To go back to the consent, Article 33, Section 2 actually tells us what it is requiring as far as contacts of the carrier to be held liable. And what it really boils down to is some sort of purposeful availment that the air carrier operates services for carriage by passengers or for carriage of passengers by air, either on its own aircraft or on another carrier's aircraft and so on within 33 Section 2. But under Daimler, you know, it of course is a very, very exacting standard of general jurisdiction. But in Daimler, the court did not foreclose the possibility that in an exceptional case that a corporation's operations in a forum other than its principal place of business or incorporated domicile could be of such a nature as to render it at home. And it's
So your argument is that the contacts with DC render Air Asia at home in DC. At least that's how I understand the case to have been teed up. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that is, I would say, almost correct. But what we're really saying here is that it is the nature of the foreign air carrier's international air carriage of passengers and that carrier's binding strict liability under the Montreal Convention that brings them into jurisdiction within the United States. And there needs to exist this other jurisdiction which can be viewed through the lens of consent or through another space of all-purpose general jurisdiction, because the Montreal Convention already provides for these bases for jurisdiction that we generally see, such as place of incorporation, place of domicile, and then as well as specific jurisdiction. So this was meant to sweep broadly, and I do think that the way to understand it is through consent, but it can also be viewed as this exceptional case. I also think...
Did you brief the consent? Because as I'm looking at your brief, on page 29 of your opening brief, in the present case, only the District of Columbia's general jurisdiction over foreign corporations is at issue.
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't think that consent was briefed explicitly. But
I don't think the word even appears in the briefing, if I'm not mistaken. It's an interesting theory, but I have to say it comes as a surprise. The way I understood the discovery that was sought and the briefing that was made was that it was all going to the volume and frequency of AirAsia's contacts with the forum and that those contacts were through the website. And there's no other allegation of any other contacts, is there? Or any factual material showing other contacts in DC?
In the District of Columbia, no.
Right. And the question is whether this is the exceptional case under Daimler, or even could be, when the only contacts that have been identified and into which discovery was sought were through AirAsia's website. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, you know, one thing that we have to consider when discussing a Montreal Convention case is that, you know, the Montreal Convention talks about jurisdiction, I would say, with a big J, an overarching jurisdiction as a state party, meaning a country. And then we're also looking at jurisdiction within our own states of the United States.
Right, because the constitutional analysis is a context analysis. And I mean, you make an interesting suggestion that consent is adequate under the Constitution, but it's not an argument that I've seen developed in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. I would ask that the court consider this argument that I am putting forth on at oral argument, as there really is not much case law. This is an issue of first impression on Article 33, Section 2. And while the general jurisdiction argument for Daimler would be an exceptional case, I understand that may be something that would be difficult for the court to hold. And I do think that consent is really how this needs to be viewed. So I actually wanted to discuss, since we are discussing jurisdiction, a little bit about how this 33 Section 2 works in practice, because I think that is really the best way to see how this article functions. And as I mentioned, there's really very little case law on Article 33, Section 2, and I was able to find one case where Article 33, Section 2 was invoked. It was Javier v. Philippines Air, which was cited to in the plaintiff's brief. And in this case, the court noted that there was personal jurisdiction for a flight from a Philippines-based airline who operated flights out of America, but the flight itself was from Canada to the Philippines, and one of the plaintiffs was an American. And here there was not even a suggestion that this was not improper under Article 33, Section 2. And the presence of Philippines Air in the United States just by operating passengers by air on its aircraft and by conducting businesses. And I see I'm out of time as of right now, Your Honor.
Sure, you could finish this thought if you want, but then we'll give you a little bit of time in rebuttal too.
Certainly.
If you could do it briefly, and please. Thanks.
The Philippines Air was operating passengers by air on its aircraft. It was conducting business through its California offices, and that sufficed for the elements in Article 33, Section 2. And so the situation on appeal today would be just one step further, and that is provided for by Article 33, Section 2. And I'll go back to that in my rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I want to make sure that neither of my colleagues have further questions for you in your opening argument.
No.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Robertson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Cynthia Robertson, appearing for the appellees AirAsia Berhad and AirAsia X Berhad. To go to the consent argument here, I don't believe that counsel is arguing that there's been there's been consent to personal jurisdiction, you know, procedurally. I think, and she can elaborate on this, but I believe what she's arguing is that the consent comes from doing business in the United States. But
under the convention, my understanding is that she's saying that under the convention that one is deemed to be a consenting party for purposes of litigation in a member state. That's what I understand her argument to be.
Yes, and I guess I need to separate the two arguments here. So under the convention, you need to both conduct passenger flights to or from the jurisdiction, and you need to conduct business operations in that jurisdiction. And AirAsia Berhad doesn't do either of those two things.
Well, if the jurisdiction is the United States for purposes of federal court and for purposes of the convention, that AirAsia X does fly into Hawaii?
Yes, but AirAsia X is a separate carrier and a separate company. It's listed separately from AirAsia Berhad on the Malaysian Stock Exchange. They have different corporate owners and they operate independently. I realize they have similar names, but they are entirely separate companies.
They operate a joint website?
They do market themselves on a website that you can access to both airlines together, and similar to other airlines that have alliances with separate carriers. So yes, you can purchase connecting flights, but AirAsia Berhad doesn't offer any flights to the United States. It has no flight numbers in the United States. So you can't take an AirAsia Berhad flight within the United States or to or from the United States. You can take an AirAsia X flight, but that's under a separate carrier flight number and a separate carrier.
We've been mentioning Daimler and the briefing addresses it, but our circuit precedent, Gorman, for example, and FC Investment Group versus IFX Markets suggest that contacts through a website could suffice for purposes of general jurisdiction. And in fact, we did remand for further discovery, at least in Gorman, on that premise. Do we have to overrule those cases in order to rule for you?
I think rather than overruling, it would be more abrogating under the Daimler standard, because you need to have something. I mean, the Daimler standard and the Goodyear standard say that you need something akin to a principal place of business in the jurisdiction. So they have to be essentially at home here.
Right.
The Fifth Circuit, for example, recently held that a website, a general access website, wasn't enough for general personal jurisdiction. It would have, It's probably dicta, but what it said was, well, what you really need is something that's akin to a physical location in the jurisdiction.
Whatever at home means, you're saying that the pre-Daimler cases just can't stand. You can't distinguish them on their facts somehow. They've just been overtaken by Daimler, so we would have to abrogate them.
Yeah, I mean, it, in that sense, yes. I mean, to make the explicit ruling that Daimler overrules them. To the extent that, you know, the door is probably open to some sort of website providing for general jurisdiction, I think that that it would have to be something closer to, as the Fifth Circuit put it, something akin to a principal place of business via the web. And I would argue that that would be something like a web-based product rather than what's more of a marketing device for a company that provides, you know, very much, forgive the term, bricks and mortar services.
It's interesting though, because most customers' interaction at a buy and sell level with airlines is exclusively online. I think it's been decades since I've been to an airline office to actually purchase a ticket. So in that sense,
that's fair. Although not necessarily from the airline websites themselves. I mean, there are certainly the Orbitz and Hotwires and other airlines websites aren't the exclusive place to purchase tickets, and not necessarily the primary place to do that. And you know, to the extent that AirAsia Berhad, which is the sole carrier here, and the only carrier that could be subject to subject matter jurisdiction under the Montreal Convention, does not offer any flights to or from the United States. You can take a connecting flight on AirAsia X or any other airline.
But tell us again about AirAsia X. In order to decide to grant the relief you seek, which is to dismiss the case, not to transfer it, what would we have to find about the lack of relationship between AirAsia Berhad and AirAsia X? Just pin down for us why transfer to Hawaii is not the right result here.
It's not the right result here because, first of all, the Montreal Convention is seeking a specific type of carrier relationship there. So although flight services can be provided, the treaty provision.
Well, putting aside the treaty, because if we don't have personal jurisdiction, we don't have to reach subject matter jurisdiction questions, right? So we could just say, we don't have personal jurisdiction, we'll let the District of Hawaii figure out anything else. And so I'm asking you, I think in terms of personal jurisdiction, why should we also think that there's no personal jurisdiction in Hawaii? I mean, maybe I'm mischaracterizing where you were going, but if
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to overtalk you there. A little bit of a delay. The AirAsia X's connections with the U.S. are also wouldn't meet the Daimler standard for general jurisdiction either. It offers a single route to and from Kuala Lumpur to Honolulu, Hawaii. Its sole business operations in the U.S. are in support of that single route. It's a tiny fraction of AirAsia X's entire business. And so, well, there is a website that's available anywhere in the U.S. or, you know, frankly, anywhere in the world. It's not specific, that website isn't specific to the U.S. And while there's some marketing to the U.S., it doesn't reach the level of general jurisdiction that Daimler demands, even taken all together. So that's the answer to that, is that AirAsia X really doesn't solve the appellant's jurisdictional problems here, is the answer to that. So, and, you know, ultimately, similarly, under the treaty, AirAsia X can't AirAsia, the fact that AirAsia X provides flight services to and from the U.S. doesn't fulfill the requirement, because the treaty actually specifically requires that the carrier, and there's no dispute that the carrier in this case is AirAsia Berhad, must conduct flight services to and from the U.S. And that doesn't mean even appellant's counsel classifies, you know, what happens or AirAsia's flight relationship with AirAsia X as connecting flights. And the treaty isn't referring to connecting flights that happen outside of the U.S. It's talking about flights that are flight numbers within the U.S. and actual flight services provided in to and from the U.S. by the specific carrier.
Ms. Robertson, you had said that there might be the exceptional case in which web alone could support personal jurisdiction. So why shouldn't we, under our circuit's liberal standard of remanding for discovery relating to personal jurisdiction, why shouldn't we just remand and at least allow appellants to find out what the facts are?
I mean, besides the fact that the appellants haven't pled specific facts that would actually establish general personal jurisdiction via the web, also, there simply isn't any theory under which AirAsia's website being available in the United States can establish anything like a principal place of business in the United States. It doesn't make AirAsia Berhad essentially at home here. Just because, you know, it accepts passengers from the United States doesn't mean that it has, you know, established itself as a business here. It doesn't offer flight services here, and it hasn't chosen to set up business operations here. It simply, you know, has a website from which, you know, you can see its flight services, but it's not even specifically directed at the United States, much less creating a principal place of business here.
Thank you. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll go back to rebuttal for Ms. Duray. Ms. Duray, we'll give you your 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to go back actually to the Javier case, because this will address Daimler again a little bit. So in Javier,
personal jurisdiction wasn't addressed as such, was it? There was no personal jurisdiction claim made there. And so it's what we sometimes refer to as a drive-by jurisdictional determination or hidden in the record. And we don't generally credit those.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that case, there was the other plaintiff was dismissed, however, for lack of personal jurisdiction, because he was a resident of Canada and tried to bring suit in the United States, which is really what the Montreal Convention was trying to prevent in Article 33, Section 2, was not so much bringing carriers to lawsuit, but to prevent foreign plaintiffs from forum shopping. And I did want to go back to how the record stands now as far as AirAsia and AirAsia X. And any reasonable consumer would believe that they are the same air carrier. You know, most consumers don't think of affiliates. They think of this is an AirAsia flight. And when you go to the booking website, that is precisely what you get. And I reference this.
Is that the standard? Because one of the things that the Supreme Court has emphasized is...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and pick it up if you want. You should be able to hear. Who would have thought we would have such issues in oral argument? No, I was just saying that one of the points of emphasis of the Supreme Court's jurisdiction, Supreme Court's doctrine on personal jurisdiction, is whether the firm can predict and structure its activities so that it knows where it's exposing itself to suit and where it's not. And so I'm just questioning why the consumers or the reasonable consumers' perception would be controlling.
And Your Honor, I am out of time, but if I could respond to your question.
Yes.
It is important because AirAsia is setting forth this, I guess it would be a fiction, that AirAsia and AirAsia X are in fact the same company. And so it's going back to 33 section 2 of being in this commercial agreement that the drafters of the Montreal Convention really predicted was going to happen. And it's not code sharing, it's not an interline agreement, but it's, as the drafters of the Montreal Convention said, some form of joint provision or marketing of services as yet undreamt of. And I think that's what we have here. And I don't think that the record is developed enough for us to understand fully what those commercial arrangements are. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.